Thank you, Cheryl, for reading that with great courage, and thank you all for remaining in your seats and not walking out. Yes, I'm afraid it is time for the service. And occasionally someone notices that I wear a watch and says and asks me for the time. And I don't know about you, but I've noticed that fewer people wear watches these days than they used to. Remember the old big pocket watches where somebody would pull out of their pocket and have a chain attached to it? I do notice that there's sort of resurgence of watches with the new iWatches with Apple Watches. But today's sermon is not so much about telling the time of the day, but asking the question in a very different way as we look around at our world and wonder and worry about the future of our planet and the cosmos. What time is it in the grand scope of human history? Is the world about to end? Will we survive the varied threats that seem so real and yet unthinkable? Dare we even talk about this, or does it just further raise our anxiety? What time is it? It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. We were all on our way to heaven. We were all on our way to hell. I had that memory in the recesses of my mind of that quote and had to, I admit, Google it and find out and remind myself of something that I'd forgotten probably from the fifth grade, that it was Charles Dickens who famously begins his A Tale of Two Cities. He's describing the age of the French Revolution, and Dickens seems not to know how to describe the time in which he was living. Should he do it positively? Are we all on our way to heaven? Or negatively, are we all on our way to hell? Perhaps Dickens knew enough about the world and history and political movements then and now and throughout history to know that it's hard to make a verdict on the affairs of the present age. Is the glass half empty or half full? Who knows? Sometimes things turn out differently from when we first expected. There are events that seem undeniably negative, yet turn out surprisingly positive. Probably have all had those experiences in our lives. And we've heard stories of people who won the lottery and they never knew how they'd cash those big checks that they have their picture taken with. But sometimes in following what happened to those lucky people, what looked so wonderful turned out to be a curse, as the instant wealth caused them to lose their way. Of course, the opposite is true. I remember my own experience as an 18-year-old. I had big plans to be a successful farmer in Nebraska. And I remember being so excited about the opportunity that seemed to just be falling in my lap to rent land and to buy cows from a neighbor who's retiring. My father and I talked about it for weeks and decided finally that we were going to go through with it. Well, to make a long story short, at the last minute, the whole deal fell apart. And I remember being devastated at the time, actually shedding tears, which I was embarrassed about as an 18-year-old. But it led me to reconsider my path, and I decided I would take 1 year at Heston College, 1 year, see what happened after that. But that first year there changed the course of my life. There I met the most important person in my life and met people that would help me think about my gifts and think about my future. To this day, sometimes my dad and I still marvel at that whole experience. What seemed at the time like such a negative experience turned out to be the life-changing experience of my life. Yeah, sometimes what we call bad events become good, and sometimes our tears turn to laughter because we believe that God is in both the good and bad times of our lives. And so maybe we suspend judgment on labeling those things either bad or good. Another thing I notice is that we good progressive folks are conditioned to think that it's up to us to make good things happen from bad things. We're conditioned to believe that if we don't do something, nothing will happen. And there's some truth in that. But what if it's not all up to us? What if behind the scenes, in the scenes, there is someone or some force who is working in and through us, and yes, sometimes even in spite of us? Well, I have all this on my mind this Sunday because we're nearing the end. We're nearing the end of the church year. Next Sunday is the last Sunday of the church year, and December 1, we begin a new church year, the beginning of Advent. Yes, it's Advent time already again. So in our gospel text this morning, that Cheryl courageously read for us, Jesus is talking about the end and coming to the end of his earthly ministry, and those who developed the lectionary placed this text at the end of the church year. Jesus moves at last deliberately throughout much of the Gospels, of where they have much of his journey headed toward Jerusalem. And there we know he will meet his earthly end on the cross. And on his way to the end, Jesus speaks of endings, and he addresses what time it is. And it's not a pretty picture he paints. The grand and glorious temple before them will be torn down, Jesus predicts. It will lie in ruins, and Jerusalem, the holy city, the center of national pride and identity, will be devastated. People will say, well, at last the Romans will have their day. They'll put an end to these Jewish rabble-rousers and troublemakers with their pretend messiahs. Now, I don't know about you, but I'd like Jesus to be a tiny bit more positive, a little more upbeat, more hopeful, maybe. This feels like a three-year-old would describe it as just plain yucky. Jerusalem, that place where God dwells, the temple, God's holy house, devastated. All of Israel's hopes and dreams at an end. And yet, even amid the predictions of pain and loss, what's Jesus' counsel there? He says, when you're dragged in front of people to give an account, you're to bear witness. Tell the truth. That in spite of it all, we believe that God is still in control. We're to bear witness and speak to a different reality, a different way of seeing beyond what seems so obvious to everyone. I can imagine that perhaps the disciples were saying to Jesus, what are we supposed to say when the world is falling apart? When you, our leader, are talking about dying, and our world is coming unglued and seemingly going to hell in a handbasket, what are we to say? What are we to do? Is there any hope? Shall we just all curse the darkness and die? What can we say? We can say, can we say, that this world in all of its turmoil and pain is God's world? Can we testify that the time is God's time? And God will not be overwhelmed by whatever happens in time? I was recently at our conference assembly in conversation with a person from living in Southern California for the last 30 years, and he's convinced that weather patterns are changing there as they are throughout the world. And wondering if perhaps, counter to what scientists say, that we perhaps have a decade to make changes, that if we haven't already passed the point of no return. And many of us are angered at people who in high places steadfastly ignore or refuse to believe what seems obvious. And I admit that in that conversation, I felt this sort of deep anxiety in the pit of my stomach. We're just one little person, we say. We try to do our bit. We recycle. We have compost heap. We are trying to lessen our carbon footprint. But it's hard when you have kids and grandkids in Southern California. And we feel like we're standing on the beach trying to hold back the waves from crashing in on the sand. And we wonder if future generations will look back and condemn us for our lack of effort to stop what to them they'll have to deal with. Jesus invites us to offer a word to the world. Testify, bear witness that in the face of so much devastation, we offer hope. You know, when we face some personal setback, we believe that we can get busy, we can tackle the problem, we can fix it sometimes. Sometimes that works for us and sometimes it doesn't. But what do we do when these problems seem so cosmic, so beyond our control? And should I mention politics? We're concerned about the language and atmosphere that's provoked by many of our leaders that feel so toxic. And we wonder, what can our little one voice do? What difference can we make? And then there's personal experience where sometimes it seems that our own temples are falling, with not one stone remaining on top of another, with job loss or with our doctor calling, our loved ones passing. And the list could go on and on. What are we to say in the face of all these things? When the sky turns dark, when beloved eternal appearing institutions crumble, yes. Even, it seems, the institution of the church. Because we've certainly faced some devastation within our beloved Mennonite Church USA in recent years. Dare we say that these times are God's times? We have a God that we believe does not abandon us in times of difficulty, but rather abides with us. does not leave us to our own devices and our own demise. Because, as we will soon bear witness in a couple of weeks, the whole message of Advent is that God comes into the messes of human existence and is born to us. And not just once, but again and again and again. And because we have that sort of redemptive God, even our worst of times can be redeemed into good times. Jesus tells us to be a witness, to look up, get your chin off your chest. This is the perfect time to declare another reality. A witness not to condemn this present world and wait for a future one like so many Christians tend to do, and therefore abandon all efforts for the renewal of this earth. But a witness that holds that this troubled world and its institutions we hold so dearly may just need to pass in order for a new day and a renewed earth to be born. Do not fear. Don't try to control what you can't control, but do what you can. And trust that God's love and presence is in all our times, those that we deem bad and those that we deem good. Though our time may be a time of travail, whatever it is, personally or in our community or in our world, even this time is God's. That's the message that God has given us to say to a frightened, anxious church, to a frightened, anxious world. So tomorrow, when you're at the office or in the classroom, or as you drink your coffee, bear witness. Jesus is not asking you to be some starry-eyed, goofy optimist. Don't worry, be happy. Everything's going to be all right. Day is as good as it gets. No, Jesus is asking you to give testimony that this world is God's world, and God holds this in God's care. In Christ, God has decisively entered human history as a reminder that it always has been and always will be God's time, God's world. So with that, I invite you to join me in a time of silence. And I invite us to examine our hearts, to be in touch with our fears for ourselves, for our families, for our community, for our world. Then to be in touch simply with our breath, most elemental thing of our lives. And if you need to, put your hand in front of your face and blow gently so you can feel your breath on your hand, because that, something you have no control over, is so elemental to life, and I believe is simply another reminder of the presence of God, the Ruach of the Spirit with us all the time. Then I invite us in our prayer of breathing just simply to let go, to trust God with this time and with future time. Join me in silence.